Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another Science Studio program. My name is Keith Pannell, and today our guest is from Germany. His name is Peter Boyle, and he's from the University of Ulm, which is sort of more or less smack in the middle, a little bit south in Germany. And he's an expert. He's a professor of chemistry. And today we're going to be talking, as we have done recently, in fact, about photovoltaics. That is, molecules that, in fact, translate the sun's energy into electricity, if we're lucky, and efficiently. So, Peter, welcome to Science Studio.
Thanks a lot. So it's a pleasure to be here.
Before we get into what you do and why you do it, let's find out, how did Peter become a scientist? I mean, what were those formative years that made you decide to be a scientist as opposed to a musician or an artist or anything else?
Yeah, I just have to remember, when I was about 13 or 14, we had chemistry in school, so we began with chemistry in school. And then I remember I got a kid's lab for Christmas, and then I started to do experiments, so growing crystals was fantastic. And my parents were very much embarrassed when I evolved gases, and it was so the typical chemistry cliché. And so I got very much interested in chemistry, and the second point was that our chemistry teacher, he was really the best one of all of the teachers we had. And at the same time, he was our sports teacher, and as a young guy, I was only interested in sports and chemistry, and so this fitted excellently, and he was a very convincing teacher. So I loved chemistry from the very beginning, and at the end of high school, it was very clear for me that I would study chemistry.
Well, what sort of sporting activity did you do?
Oh, wow, a lot. I played table tennis. I played soccer, and at our school, handball was a very appreciated sport. So we did nearly everything, athletism, and so.
So, I mean, I'm thinking back to my childhood in England. Every Wednesday afternoon and Saturday afternoon were reserved in school for a sports activity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, soccer, rugby was mainly our game.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's the same idea, though. There was this insistence that, as well as study, that you should have some athletic activity.
Sure.
Compulsory.
Sure.
And
sure.
And I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah.
So
that's true. Yeah.
Where did you go to university? Did you stay close to home?
Yeah, it was pretty close to home. I went then to the University of Stuttgart and studied chemistry there. And during these studies, I got as well very interested in organic chemistry, in organic materials. And then I did my diploma thesis and the PhD thesis in this area. This fascinated me always that you are able to prepare new molecules which nobody in the world had made before.
Right.
So I remember we had a practical course to do in the seventh semester or so, and this was the first time that you would do real research. And then I was really keen to prepare a new molecule, which was for me a real big thing. Nowadays, I know nothing is easier than to prepare a new molecule.
Well, that's
but,
not... I mean, you can make new molecules and new molecules.
Sure.
Some of them have utility and others are just copies of others.
That's right. That's right. But and then I was fascinated by this, and always I was dreaming, even as a schoolboy, I would prepare a new material, a dye or something like that, and maybe it has an application afterwards.
All right. Now, I mean, that's interesting because in England, the application of the science isn't always as good as the science itself, right? I mean, I remember as a student there, and it's Europe, you did the chemistry, you did the experiments, and you got your excitement, and you made new knowledge. But the application of it was further back in one's mind. I think things have changed now. I mean, I think
right.
Now all around the world, people are saying, look, if you're going to do research, then you're going to have some form of goal which may be applicable.
Sure.
Germany's very good at that, I think, at the moment. Would you agree? Or?
Yes, I would say so. And as you said, this is fully correct. This attitude changed a bit, and this is also due to the funding. If you write proposals to get money for your research, it's always a good thing to say the molecules or materials we'll prepare are good for something and could be applied in this or that. And so I think in this respect, something changed. And on the other hand, one has to see that basic research without any application in mind is as well very important. Maybe somebody else 10 years later discovers your work, your reactions, your molecules, and applies them. That's very important.
I mean, you take somebody like Werner, great German scientist from two centuries ago now. Yeah. But, I mean, he did this wonderful work on inorganic systems
right. That
is classic. No one really paid much attention to it. It was
right. Just
done and everybody knew it. But now people are taking some of his optically active, what we call octahedral six-coordinate metal complexes,
yeah. And
using them for catalysis.
Right.
Right? I mean, nobody thought of this years ago. And so you never quite know where your work is going to land up.
Sure.
But before we get off that topic, though, the participation of German industry, I think, is very strong in universities. You care to elaborate on that a little?
Yes, so chemical industry in Germany, as you said, is very strong, and I think we can be happy about this situation. There are many other countries where this is not true. So chemical industry, besides car and machinery industry, in Germany is the industry for earning money. Yeah.
Yes.
Pharmaceuticals, polymers, materials, all you can imagine. And certainly most of the research groups in chemistry at German universities have contracts with industry. So this is quite normal. And there are also big consortia funded by the Ministry of Education where industry research groups and university groups work together, however, on, let's say, regenerative energies or on applications.
All right. So, I mean, I think that's probably more efficient interaction there than in the U.S., as far as I can tell from my experience anyway.
Yeah, the interaction sometimes is difficult. So these industry guys, they want to know many things from you, but they don't tell you what they do. Yeah, so this is quite typical sometimes.
Okay. So anyway, there you are. You're now a professor of chemistry
right. At
Ulm. And tell us, your area of interest is organic chemistry that's based upon carbon, but with a very clear application at the moment to what we call photovoltaics. Would you like just to run through quickly what that means?
Yeah, it's very easy to explain. So we do basic research in organic materials. So this means we are developing organic semiconductors in contrast to the inorganic semiconductors like silicon or cadmium telluride. So this is all organic. I know that organic has a different meaning in US, but so we call it organic materials because it's synthesized. It's a synthesized material with tailored properties, and the properties we would like to have is certainly absorption of light because we want to prepare organic solar cells out of it. And then we design these molecules, so we have a lot of experience in that. We synthesize them in the lab. Then we characterize them, which means absorption spectra. So we would like to know how many photons of the solar spectrum are taken up. And then we test them in organic solar cells and this is as well in collaboration with a spin-off company which came out of our university and the collaboration partners in Dresden. This is called Heliatech.
Oh, Dresden in the old East Europe.
In the old East Germany.
That's interesting. I mean, are there now stronger connections?
Absolutely.
Joining East and West? I mean,
so in science, there is no difference anymore.
Okay, that's very nice to hear.
Everything grew together. And,
right.
Certainly, the former East was supported heavily in the very beginning, in the beginning of the 90s. And so there are no borders anymore.
Right.
Then these materials are tested. And so the area of organic photovoltaics is a future technology which will come up. So we have first demonstrators in hand. And I always say in lectures, we should not see organic photovoltaics as a competition to the silicon-based photovoltaics, so the properties we probably never will reach with organics, but there are other applications.
You think, therefore, the what I might call the efficiency of the organic photovoltaics will not be as good as the current silicon ones? I mean, that's what you implied.
Yes, at the moment this is true, but if you look at research, which is a worldwide, highly competitive field at the moment, we slowly increase, and the world record, for example, is 12% efficiency at the moment.
For the organics?
For the organics, whereas in silicon, on a lab scale, you are at 25, so we are just half at the efficiency. But on the other hand, as I said, we can go for completely different applications, because these organic photovoltaics, so these, we call it solar foils, they are made purely of plastic. They are very lightweight, so it's about 1/40 of the weight of a comparable silicon module. It can be flexible. It can be semi-transparent, which means one of the main application which we and these spin-off companies have in mind is, for example, building and car integration. And if you imagine a skyscraper, which you can cover with these beautifully light blue organic solar foils, it doesn't matter, at least in my eyes, if you have 12 or 20% efficiency. If you have sufficient area available, it doesn't matter. And for example, in glass roofs of cars, it's very interesting to integrate them in windows. All these are all applications which you wouldn't or couldn't do with silicon, for example.
So, in fact, I mean, that's a big one there, because people like windows.
Right.
I mean, the window tax in England, you know, made people have tiny, tiny windows in the 18th or 17th century. Mm. I don't know when. And so old houses got small windows. Modern houses, phenomenal big windows.
Sure.
And so that would be a very clear application for photovoltaics of organic derivatives.
Right. And so these, there are certainly worldwide 10 or 12 spin-off companies developing this new technology, and this will be one of the first applications. As I said, no competition for silicon, but completely new fancy things.
You're listening to Science Studio. My name is Keith Pannell. We're talking today to Professor Peter Boyle from the University of Ulm in Germany, and we'll be back in one moment.
Welcome to Medical Discovery News. I'm Dr. Norbert Herzog.
And I'm Dr. David Niesel. When's the last time you and a friend or spouse argued over memories of a shared event, and you swear your version is the right one?
Don't be so sure. Our memories can not only be unreliable, in the future they could be manipulated.
Ew, I'm seeing shades of the Manchurian Candidate and the Matrix.
Well, we know from studies in the 1940s that memories are stored in the temporal lobe and in the hippocampus. It's our experiences that produce changes in neuronal chemicals and connections which create memories which are stored.
Scientists have now identified the precise cells in the neural network involved in this process. They did this by creating mice that were genetically engineered to express a light-sensitive proteins in neural cells of the hippocampus, which is where we store spatial memories.
The mice were first placed in box A, and as they began storing memories of the box, it activated the spatial neurons and thus the engineered light-sensitive proteins. So when the mice were placed in box B, where a mild electrical shock was applied to their feet as flashes of lights pulse, their memories of box A were activated.
Remarkably, when the mice were placed back in box A, they showed fear, even though they had not received shock therapy there. The light had changed their memory of that box. That means scientists had implanted a false memory.
Wow, shades of the X-Files. Imagine people being programmed or having their memories altered. Think of war vets or victims of violent crime who could be cured of post-traumatic stress disorder.
But is that wise? We, along with scientists and ethicists, will grapple with these dilemmas as this technology develops in the future.
We are Drs. David Niesel and Norbert Herzog at the University of Texas Medical Branch and the Frank H. Netter School of Medicine at Quinnipiac University, where biomedical discoveries shape the future of medicine. For much more and our disclaimer, go to medicaldiscoverynews.com.
Welcome back to Science Studio. Keith Pannell, Peter Boyle from Ulm University in Germany, and we're talking about photovoltaics and photovoltaics, molecules that will take the sun's light and energy and translate it directly into electricity. And we're talking about those that are sort of fabricated from predominantly carbon, as opposed to the inorganic materials that we see a lot of based upon my favorite element, silicon. You don't see any end to the use of silicon, I hope, in photovoltaics.
I don't think so. So the prices of very pure silicon itself went down, and also the prices of the silicon modules went down a lot. And maybe 2 years ago, I said in lectures, organic photovoltaics, when it's produced in future, will be maybe half or one-third of the price of silicon. But this is not true anymore. Due to these Chinese dumping prices, at least in Germany, silicon became extremely cheap. So we cannot argue anymore by price. And
Is that a competitive price, or is it just totally subsidized to corner the market?
So you mean the price for the silicon modules?
Yeah, from China.
So to give you a number, at the moment, silicon costs 50 euro cents per watt peak.
Can you translate that into dollars and kilowatt hours?
Yeah, it's about 60 U.S. Cents per watt peak.
Okay.
And I think the real production costs are about $1.20 per watt peak. So you see how much this is supported or discounted by the Chinese government, which in the last 2 years led to 3 or 4 bankruptcies of German companies producing silicon modules. And this was a severe impact. So
that's interesting, because just last year I put solar panels on my roof, and it's German company, but fabricated, I think, in Taiwan. So, you know, this world market is very complicated to follow.
Yeah.
So let's get back to some science.
Right? Yeah,
it's
okay.
A lot easier.
Okay, sure.
Tell us about the nature of these photovoltaics that you're interested in, the organics.
Right.
What's the key feature of them, structurally and chemically?
Chemically, the key feature of all of these, let's say, organic materials which are implemented in these organic solar cells are conjugated pi systems.
That's a lot of little benzene rings pushed together.
Yeah, benzene
maybe.
Rings
right.
And similar heterocycles. And so this is most important, that you have pi electrons, because they can move and transport charge. And this is the most important thing in these, as well in silicon photovoltaics, that you separate charges and transport them to the electrodes, and then you can use it as electricity. So all of these organic materials should have not only a good absorption of the solar spectrum, but as well should be very good transporters of charges. And that's the difficult task you have when you design these materials, when you synthesize it, and therefore you have to look at least 5 or 6 different properties which should be optimal altogether.
And right. I mean, you get great efficiency, but then something else screws up down the line.
Right.
What are those other issues, actually? Let's discuss that a little.
Yeah, so the other issue besides absorption of light is, as I said, transport. So we have to adjust the energetic levels of these molecules, which is sometimes quite difficult. Then they should be processable. So there are 2 technologies in this area. One is that they are processed from solution, so they are dissolved in an organic solvent, and then, for example, by doctor blading or spin coating, brought onto substrates.
A spin coating process is where you take your solution and literally spin it on some substrate. It spreads out, the solvent evaporates, and in theory you're left with a uniform film.
Exactly.
Not necessarily always so easy to get the uniformity though, right?
That's true, but the excitement behind this is that people think that we can in future print organic electronics or organic photovoltaics like a newspaper. So they think that if they can solution process these materials, we can print it at the end on a very cheap way, like a daily newspaper. And the other technique is vacuum technology. And this technology is established in conventional electronics since 30 or 40 years. So this means they should be thermally stable, and we have several more parameters we have to take into account. So it's not an easy game. And the daily life in the lab is we have a fantastic new molecule, we think, and we adjust one screw, and then we have to readjust three others. Yeah. So that's the daily life. So it's just a feedback loop. Yeah.
I mean, that sort of lets the audience into the sort of how does a laboratory like that work? First of all, it's interdisciplinary.
You've got
to have some people who have got some concept of theory.
Absolutely.
How to change the energy levels of the electrons so
right.
that when you excite them, they do run away and take charge.
Right.
Then how to make them robust enough to be in films. So tell us a typical grouping that you have in your team.
Absolutely correct what you're saying. And first of all, I should state that we are still very far from a rational development of these materials. So it's a lot of trial and error. And first of all, sometimes we calculate the molecules by theoretical means, so by theoretical programs. Then we put on a synthesis, how we think that the molecule can be synthesized from commercially available starting materials. Then they are synthesized in the lab, typically by students, PhD students, and so they learn with it. And then the material is purified, and it's very clear that the purer semiconductor is, the better is the performance. So
right.
we put a lot of effort in purification. And then we characterize these materials. And then we send it to the partners, and they test it in first test devices. And then this is the typical feedback loop. And then we get the information, and let's say 8 or 9 out of 10 new molecules don't bring
the
world
bin.
Record efficiency you think of. Yeah.
Well, in fact, that's interesting. Just because you don't break the new record or you don't come close, do you discard that particular molecular structure, or do you play games with it?
So organic chemists are players.
Yeah,
so we play games.
Absolutely.
And we would like, so we then change the molecule a little and then test again. And this is a typical feedback loop. And I should tell you that maybe we are in this area since 10 years. So we started relatively early with this collaboration with our physics partners in Dresden. And so in the meanwhile, we have synthesized more than 100 compounds. And the company was outsourced in 2006. They have as well a chemistry group. They have maybe synthesized 200 or 250 new compounds. And all these were tested. We have a feedback loop. And now you get slowly to a champion molecule, which is now, for example, in first demonstrators.
And but so your champion molecule, what efficiency are we talking about?
This is the 12%, so we have the world record in this.
Yeah, but it's previous it was 11.95 or something
no,
like that.
No, previously it was 10.7. it's like sports. So
right.
I compare quite often our science with sports. And so once in a while I said, once in my career I would like to have a world record and then I retire. But
So you've got it, right.
I got it last year.
At least that's
year.
A published world record. There may be somebody that's sitting on all sorts of molecules
right.
that have got 13%.
Yeah, we did not release the structure of the molecules. It was a press release. This
oh, really?
Counts as well, yeah.
Oh, so you actually then did a press release before you actually got the papers
right.
published.
Right.
Well, now that's a bit dangerous, I would say that. I remember cold fusion, you know,
Flash
and I remember hearing.
Pulse, yeah.
yeah, I remember hearing that on the radio.
Uh-huh.
I don't know where I was. I could have been in England at the time. And I thought, my goodness, that's going to be really dramatic. And then I thought, secondly, about 2 minutes after, well, why am I hearing this on the radio? You know, I go to a lot of chemistry meetings. I would have thought that I would have heard this at the more normal sort of output in the science relationship, and that is a meeting. So why did you decide to do this yourselves? Because I find that a little bit surprising.
Yeah, certainly all these new compounds are patented before.
Yes.
So not in a science journal, but in a patent. So.
Well, I understand that, but patents are notoriously misleading.
right?
So I don't. You haven't defended your action yet. Why did you go public before you did the scientific review?
Yeah, because it's in our community, it's really a race. So everybody wants to have a new record. And it's like in sports, you have to be quick.
This is actually very interesting, Peter, because it allows the audience and people in general to see that science is very similar to many other areas. And personalities get into this.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure. A lot.
Right.
And the main competitors are in China. So China has such a huge number of scientists working in this field. So sometimes I think we cannot compete anymore. But,
Just before we finish, Germany, going back to Germany as a nation, and Germany is sort of right on the vanguard of photovoltaics, I think, right? A lot of it in wind power also. But nuclear power is just – that's not an issue anymore, it seems to me, in Germany.
So nuclear power will be shut down until 2021 completely.
And you mean the current power stations?
The current
are just
power
being
stations
taken off grid.
Absolutely. So we had, I think, 21 in total in Germany. Already, at least 8 or 9 are shut down, and the rest will be shut down until 2021.
And then what happens in 2021? You switch
so
them
we
all
ran
back
out
on?
Of electricity, maybe. No. So certainly there is a huge effort to increase regenerative energy, which is mainly wind energy in the northern part of Germany, so offshore. And there is a lot of support by politics for photovoltaics.
Right.
And if I'm correct, maybe at the moment more than 20 or 21% of the energy comes from renewables. And so this will certainly increase, has to increase until 2021. So we are looking forward. Yeah.
Well, just like you're going to close down your power stations in 2021, we've got to close down Science Studio. Your allotted 28 minutes is finished.
Okay.
So Peter Boyle from the University of Ulm in Germany, thank you very much for being with us on Science Studio.
It was a great pleasure to talk to you, and I very much appreciate it.
And we'd like to thank Norma Martinez and also Dennis Wu for putting this together and being the producers. And we'll be back next week with another Science Studio. Bye-bye.
I'm Noemi Rojas with your Synapse Flash. New Mexico State University in Las Cruces is having a conference for girls in 5th through 10th grades. The workshops are designed to influence young girls to take more math, computing, engineering, and science courses. The conference takes place April 5th. Find more information at Synapse, the region's life sciences news digest, mcasynapse.org. Support for Synapse comes from Kindred, a transitional care hospital.